certainly is. Brenton Meagle and Lachlan Harvey. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon to you.
Kapow, kapow. Oh, I just shocked them both.
There was plenty of that.
Absolutely played cops and robbers.
What do you reckon about this nonsense that we're not allowed to play this sort of thing in our primary schools?
Well, I don't know what you were allowed to do back in school when I was of that age, but I know that when I came home, I had an older brother, so there was plenty of casual violence
right,
in our household.
Yeah. Cowboys and Indians and cops and robbers. And
for mine,
you know,
nothing wrong with that.
No.
I don't think.
And you've both got kids?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Young kids, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, Nerf guns are something that kids play with all the time. Well, a lot of the time. And they're just a soft thing that, admittedly, at close range, they hit you, you know it. But, you know, keep it away from the face and everything's quite harmless, I think.
I was happy that you knew what a spud gun was.
Spud gun? Absolutely. Yeah, grew up with spud guns. And, I mean, I grew up in a generation where instead of having softball, we had big brown wood chips, like big bark chips that would have been in some, I'll talk old language, about 3 inches long and about an inch and a half wide and about an inch thick. And it was a real mark of honour if you could hit someone flush in the middle of the back with one of those.
They were the good old days, that's for sure.
Mind you also got one back.
Yeah, you got one back, which was fair in that world.
Absolutely.
It was fair. Brenton and Lachlan are here, of course, to give you any financial advice that you want to ring up and seek. 8223-0000 is the number. Gentlemen, new financial year. Crikey. A whole new world has begun.
Yes, well, a whole new world in some respects, but more things change, the more they stay the same. Change is a bit of a constant in the world of financial planning, particularly as it relates to superannuation rules. It seems to be the one thing that they just can't keep their hands off. They just want to keep tinkering with the rules.
Now, there's one thing that I noticed that hasn't really had much sort of exposure, so I thought we might talk about it, is downsizing your super, downsize super contributions.
Yeah.
Brand new rule that's come in. Really interesting if I'm thinking of, downsizing my house.
Yeah, so this is actually one rule that is a positive rather than a negative. It's really a way to allow people over the age of 65 that are retired that otherwise wouldn't be allowed to contribute to super to get that money into superannuation if they sell their home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that people haven't been able to do before, and it's a really positive thing. So we could perhaps go through some of the key rules around and just explain what it is and how it works, because there hasn't been a lot of media attention on this because it doesn't impact a huge amount of people. It's only for those people that are selling their house past the age of 65 that would be interested in this.
So I'm 65. The kids have moved out. They've married or moved overseas or interstate or whatever and not under my roof anymore. So I've got the big three-bedroom house costing me a fortune.
Yep.
I want to downsize. It's a pretty logical step to actually take some of the money that I make and stick it in my super. I'm now allowed to do that.
Yeah, it is.
But there are some limits.
Yeah, there's lots of lifestyle reasons why you might be better off with a smaller house, a lower maintenance house. And it's not necessarily because you're tired of mowing lawns. It might actually just be a better lifestyle for you. You know, you can just lock the house up. You can leave. You can go on holidays. It just might be a better lifestyle.
Mm. So what are the regulations that I have to meet to be able to do this?
Okay, so over 65, you're not working, you've sold your home. First of all, the home itself must have been held for 10 years.
Right, okay.
Okay, so it can't be just one that you bought last year. Mm-hmm. So it's got to be sort of a long-term arrangement. It's got to be that the home would otherwise be classified as your own home for capital gains tax purposes. So you'd get a capital gains tax exemption when you make money out of selling your own home. This would be the same criteria. So it's got the definition of your own home is basically the same as the capital gains tax there.
What it also then means is that you can put up to $300,000 from the sale of your home into superannuation. Normally, if you're over 65, you've got to meet what's called a work test.
Yep.
And that work test is 40 hours of gainful employment in a 30-day period. That doesn't apply under the downsizing homeowner rules for the super contributions. The other important thing is it might be that it's been your family home for a long number of years, but it might just be in the husband's name or the wife's name if we've got a couple. Now, if it's only in one of their names, it still means that both members of that couple are eligible to be able to contribute up to $300,000
each
into superannuation. So, for example, if you live in a million-dollar home and you decide you're going to downsize into a lifestyle village or a unit or something a bit smaller worth, say, $400,000, means you've each got $300,000 that you can put into superannuation under these downsizing homeowner rules.
This is a when you think about this, think it through. This is really quite a big move, isn't it?
It is
on behalf of the government.
It's a real change.
As Treasurer.
It allows people that wouldn't otherwise have the opportunity to get money into super, and in particular convert that super fund into a pension, where they can receive tax-free income for the rest of their life, or as long as that pension lasts, and that's a powerful thing.
Brenton, for those who might not be aware, what's the advantage of putting, you know, $300,000 or $600,000, as much as we can, into our super fund?
Yeah, look, putting a whole lot of money into super means that you're in a position where, as Lachlan said, you can turn it into an income stream.
Yep.
And because it's gone in as what's called ultimately a non-concessional or a tax-free contribution, there's no tax implications on the earnings within the fund, no taxation implications on the income that you receive. But also from a death benefit point of view, if, for example, it were to go ultimately to your adult children and it's gone in completely tax-free, there's no tax implications for your kids. So it really comes back to some taxation benefits along the way that make it quite advantageous for people.
Yeah, mostly tax. Mostly tax advantage of getting that money into super.
And on the Treasurer's, from the Treasurer's point of view, what he's trying to do is actually easing the burden on the welfare system, isn't it? Getting you to pay for your own retirement. That's the incentive from his point of view?
Well, I suppose that money's going to count. If you sell your home, that money's going to count for Centrelink purposes, whether the money's sitting in your bank account, or whether you've used it to buy some shares, or whether you've used to put it into super or an allocated pension. It still counts as an asset.
Mm.
And this is the thing that people are just going to have to really be aware of. When you're downsizing, and we were talking about an example before where, let's say a couple had $1 million home,
yeah,
right, and let's say they've got $300,000 in superannuation, $300,000 in super, they could still get a full age pension, right? So they're getting $35,000
a year. On $300,000 in super?
Yeah, $300,000 in super, they still can get the full pension. That's about $35,000 a year of benefit from the pension.
Hmm.
Now, if they sold that $1 million home and went and bought a $400,000 home, that's fine, they can do that, but that $600,000 cash that they create from that is going to put them over the upper limit, so they go from being on a full pension to no pension at all, and they're going to be self-funded retirees, which is okay because they've got money to work with. They've got $600,000 plus another $300,000 there, but people have really got to think twice about doing that and think, well, what are the other implications? I'm going to lose an age pension.
Mm.
Am I actually going to be better off?
Mm. So you've got to do the sums.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, so certainly that's a scenario where getting advice would be really, really helpful to you. Whether you put that money into super or whether you leave it in the bank account, it's still going to count as an asset.
Yeah,
it's still going to cause a problem.
Yeah. But if you use that money to actually fund your own retirement, you lose the pension. Is it an option to use that money up, let that run down, and then go onto the pension in later years?
Yeah, definitely.
That would be one avenue I could go down.
That's one quirk of the pension system that is really hard to reconcile, is that people can go out and spend all of their money and then go on a full-age pension.
Mm.
People can spend it on holidays. You can't give it away because there's rules around gifting, but there's no rules about excessive spending and taking luxury holidays and things like that.
Mm. Phil has called in from Pasadena. Phil, thanks for calling. You got a question for the boys.
No worries. I know this bloke who sold his house. His company sold it for him all up for a couple of thousand. And he gave him basically the sign, the plan of the house, and he opened it himself, and because the house was so good and, you know, it was a good price, it was sort of market price, he had a flock of people coming in, and within, I think it was like 2 weeks, it sold. But he asked all these real estate agents around how much it would cost, and most work on 2-3%, depending on who, you know, what it is. So, you know, he would have saved probably 30 grand.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And I mean, the thing is, with all the computer tools you got now, with photography technology, with all these higher places that you can get furniture, like, to fill in your house, for $2,000 or $3,000, you can sell your house.
Yeah, to staging. Yeah, and there's no rules. As long as you get the right advice and you tick all the boxes, there's no rules against a home sale,
is
there?
No, and that's what I was about to say. There's no rules against you selling your own home. I guess most people use an agent because, in some respects, it's the done thing. They've also got the expertise and the ability, and often they've got, lists of people looking for certain homes that can make it quite an easy process. I've seen situations where You know, the sell-it-yourself home can take a whole lot longer to sell.
Yep, yep.
But it sounds like in Phil's example, you know, it happened really quickly because it was, you know, everything was right about doing it, price and location.
Absolutely.
And all those sorts of things.
And I would imagine, though, agents would say, we will guarantee we'll get you a higher price than if you sell it yourself. But you'd never know.
They can't guarantee that. But there's a lot of expertise that experienced real estate agents have. And I would be erring on the side of caution and using an expert. Mm. That would be my view.
Thanks, Phil. Guy, is it Gawler? Hi, Guy.
Oh, g'day. I gather you're going to tell me to speak to an expert, but I just wanted an opinion.
You've got two in the room now, not three. I'm just sitting on the sideline.
Yeah, I'm not an expert either, but I've got a scenario for you. Where my parents own a home, have done for, I think, about 12 years. It's in New South Wales. Now, they were thinking of selling it to me as I was then to inherit it anyway, and then renting it back at, you know, a nominal fee, you know, $1 a week or whatever, and then putting that money into super. Now, they're already of age and then 70s, and Dad receives a sort of a war pension. So would there be any negative implications of doing that? Or
yeah, you'd want to think long and hard about doing that because perhaps your parents have got, maybe they have age pension issues, whether that might make a difference to their age pension. So you'd have to think about it from that point of view.
Wouldn't it be like a capital gain or an asset either way, like whether it's in their super or whether, they, you know, considering they own it?
Good question. It'd be capital gains tax exempt most likely for them when they sell it to you. But then while you're holding that as an investment property, you're accruing capital gain. So in many ways...
To receive any sort of I'm disabled, so I won't actually get any super or anything like that.
Well, it doesn't mean that and you won't pay capital gains tax when you come to sell that property down the track.
Yeah, I wouldn't be looking at selling it, but we just sort of thought in the transfer process and whatever, like, would it be beneficial to do that, or would there be any negative implications? But that's what they want to do. I mean, I'm not bothered about it. But they seem to think there's some positives in doing that, and I don't really know what they are.
I mean, the biggest negative associated with it is that there would, assuming in New South Wales it would be similar to South Australia, there would be stamp duty implications for you purchasing the property, whereas upon death, estates transfer to a surviving beneficiary without any stamp duty implications. So you've really got to weigh up the upfront cost of doing it versus the longer term implications. If it means putting some funds, you know, in your folks' pocket, as it were.
Well, that's what it's about. Frees up them, you know, $500,000 for them to do whatever they want to do, you know.
I guess the Centrelink implications would need to be considered if they
are. Yeah, they don't receive any Centrelink income at all. It's all war pension.
And what about for you, Guy? Are you receiving any kind of Centrelink benefit at the moment?
Yeah, I do, and I've looked into the capital gains aspects of that, and it's not something that bothers me. It doesn't impact the little tiny amount that I get at all.
So we'd have to look at it from their point of view as well as your point of view and just make sure that you're both going to be better off, because it's no point in benefiting one but not the other.
Mm. I've only just been hit with it, so I just heard your program and thought, well, gee, here's an opportunity.
It's a good question, a real dilemma, Guy. Suggest you perhaps make an appointment with the guys and they can go through it in fine detail with you. It is an interesting one, isn't it?
It is an interesting one, and that's something that we could definitely crunch
the numbers on. Is it a win-win or is it a win-lose for one party? Yeah.
I've seen it where it's been a win-win.
And I've
seen it where it's been a win, not so sure.
Yeah, right.
So it's really important to make sure it is going to be a win-win for Guy and for his folks.
Yeah.
And as I say, it's weighing up some of the short-term costs versus longer-term implications for both parties. You know, if Guy's dad or mum are on a Veterans Affairs pension, that may be impacted because of the asset that they would own. But again, without knowing all of their situation, it's really tough to to know.
Keep listening, Guy, and I'll give you the contact details for the guys at the end of the segment. And we're speaking to Brenton Meagle and Lachlan Harvey from Goldsborough Financial Services, here to take your calls about any of your money matters. So you've got questions about your insurance, your super, your pension, whatever. Give us a call, 822-3000. But we should just point out that any comments they make shouldn't be accepted as direct advice. We suggest you contact them and make an appointment, and they can give you a very private one-on-one. Chris at West Lakes has got a question about superannuation. How are you, Chris?
Not too bad, yourself?
Yeah, good, thanks, man.
Yeah, listen, I've got a question. You said if you downsize your property, we're approaching 50. What if you upsize your property and you sell your existing property? Can that still be put up in super or not?
Hey, Chris, you have hit the nail on the head with a very interesting point there. So this downsizing super contribution for people over the age of 65 being an opportunity for people to get money into super where they otherwise wouldn't have. The word downsizer super contribution is very misleading. You don't have to be downsizing your own home at all. You could be upsizing, buy a more expensive home.
You don't have to
home.
Downsize.
Not at all. In fact, there's no obligation to buy a new home okay. at all. Oh. So you could be selling a property with the intention of, as we were talking about before, living in a tent, and then you've got cash available, you need to do something with it, you can put it into superannuation up to $300,000, so long as you meet all of the other criteria.
Is it over 65, this apply, rule applies?
Yes.
Under 65, you can't do it?
Yes, because, of course, under 65, you're eligible to make a contribution to super anyway, up to $100,000 a year, or potentially $300,000 if you're using up your next 2 years' worth of contributions.
Right.
So people under 65 are usually going to be okay. This rule really only helps people that are 65 and over. But yeah, as we said, it's really a bit misleading to call it a downsizer contribution, because we were talking before, if someone had a $600,000 home and they were moving to another $600,000 home for a couple, that means that they could each put $300,000 into super. If they had that money available in cash outside of their own home, they could put it into super.
Oh, excellent. Okay, I understand that. So basically, it's per person, $300,000, is it?
That's
per
correct.
Person, $300,000. So even if an individual owned the home, both members of the couple could put the money into super, where it's the example of the spouse.
And so then the benefits of doing that is basically, if you did put it into a bank deposit, you'd be paying tax on the on the income.
Yeah,
right?
potentially, because not everyone in retirement pays tax. But for those people that do, this is a way to really set it up so that you're just setting it up in a way that you're less likely to pay tax.
Thank you. I've benefited from listening to this today. Thank you very much.
Good on you. Thanks, Chris. Okay. Thanks for calling. What's the super contribution cap? It's 1.6 million, or what's...
So the maximum that you can transfer from superannuation to an income stream is $1.6 million.
Right, okay.
So that's what's called the transfer balance cap. So there is what's called a total super contribution threshold, which is also at $1.6 million, but this downsizer contribution doesn't actually count towards that.
Okay.
So again, there's some quirks in the system that you've got to think through.
Not that I have to worry about
it. And that's where getting advice and making sure that you know what you're doing and lining all of your ducks up before you make the decision to downsize is really important. Because the other thing we have, sorry to interrupt, the other thing that we haven't mentioned, you have to make the super contribution within 90 days of settlement on the property.
Right.
So you can't decide, all right, I'm going to sell my property now, and late in the financial year, I'm going to make the super contribution. You won't be eligible. It must be within the 90 days, and there's a tax office form that you must submit with your super contribution to make sure that it's all kosher and above board.
And your home has to have been sold this financial year. Not last one, but this one. So, and that
this kicks in from last Sunday.
Yeah, and that goes from when you signed the contract. So even if you've just received settlement today, you probably can't put that money into super, because chances are you actually signed the contract last financial year.
Yeah, okay, yep. That's why it pays to get advice from you chaps. Ian's at Onkaparinga. G'day, Ian.
G'day, guys. How you going?
Good.
Just a couple of questions. The age pension, when am I eligible? If I'm born in 1962 and my partner's born in 1960, am I eligible, and at what age would I be eligible?
At the moment, you would both be eligible for the age pension at age 67.
Yep.
So,
and what happens? What happens when she's 2 years in front of me, though, on being eligible? What happens when we're together?
Yep, so what would happen is one of you... So you would be eligible for the age pension, and your partner would not be eligible for the age pension, and so therefore you would get half of what's called the couple's pension. So you're still treated as a couple, but you would get your share, but your partner wouldn't get her share.
So, right, until she turns 67.
Correct, until she's also of age, pension age. So what you've then got to look at is what are some of the strategies that you can use to maximise your age pension for that couple of years, depending then on whether you would both end up being eligible for the age pension or neither of you eligible. So there's a whole lot of things that, you know, from an advice point of view, we would be able to talk through.
And the other thing to point... Sorry, go ahead.
What is the year that you're not eligible? Say I was born in, say, 68. Would I be eligible in 68, or is it 65 or 1965?
For people born later than the 1st of January 1957, age pension age is 67, but there are some proposals to potentially change that to increase age pension age through to age 70. Now, none of that's been legislated, but there have been proposals put in place for that to happen.
It was 1957, you said.
1957, right. That's right. 1st of January 1957. If you're born later than that date, then your age pension age is 67.
Okay.
All right, Ian.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for calling. Ken's at Huntfield Heights. Hi, Ken.
G'day, guys. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I've been with a company called, I don't know if you guys have heard of them, called Qadari Securities or COSEC. And they've had my super, but this is... I'm getting a bit worried because it's gone very quiet lately, and usually ring up, they trade in shares or something, and they ring me up and say, "Oh, we've got profits on this share, and we'll get rid of that one and lock in profits and sell another one and buy." I'm just a bit worried about my superannuation, if how it's going to be to get it out, and when time comes, and is this company a legitimate company, or is it? It's not going that well.
All right, well, I won't comment on the company that you're dealing with, but it sounds like you've got a broker that contacts you from time to time and makes investment recommendations. You approve the investment recommendations, and that's what is being held within your super fund. Does that sound about right?
That's about right, yeah. And how would you go about when time comes to get that super out? What happens then?
Okay, so the superannuation rules are the same, more or less, for everybody, pretty much every super fund. Sounds like you might have a self-managed super fund or something similar. Where someone else is helping you with the investment advice. I think it's really important not only to talk to someone about the investment side of it, but to talk to someone about the strategic side of it. What you're allowed to do, when you're allowed to access your money, is what you've got in super enough to provide for your retirement, all of those sort of issues. So if the broker that you're using is not providing that information, that's something that you can seek out separately through a financial advisor.
Yeah.
I don't know this, but I'm imagining Ken should also be getting an annual statement from the superannuation fund. Proper,
yeah, although
not
if,
the broker.
If it's a self-managed super fund, it's really Ken's responsibility to go out and prepare those financial statements through an accountant.
Right.
Is it a self-managed super fund, Ken, or is it...
No, it's not self-managed. They manage it for me. It goes into AGM or... It goes to a different company. So what they do is they trade the shares and the profits go into the super, and then they just buy more shares with what's left.
All right. So it sounds to me like you pretty much know what's going on, but you haven't spoken to them for a while, so it's definitely time for you to sit down with them and go through a run-through of what you've got, why is it set up the way that it is, what level of risk are you taking on board with your investments, because it's really important for you to understand that. And if it's all in shares, then you're probably at the upper end of the risk scale, and you just need to make sure that that's the right thing for you to be invested in.
Yeah, good luck with that, Ken. I suggest also seek advice on that one. Thanks very much, gentlemen. Lots of good calls there, and a very interesting conversation. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks.